You know it's time to do it major. Here's to the hustlers, the movers and shakers. Get up on your grind, don't let the haters get ya. I know that you got a vision, now it's time to deliver. Yeah, yeah. Giving you the tools, helping you to grow. Level up, time to shine like you never did before. Let them know, more than a podcast, it's a mindset. You can do anything, you just gotta keep grinding. Let's go. The Entrepreneur Adventure. The Entrepreneur Adventure. You ready?
What I consistently hear from people is, I would love to own my own business, but I don't have the idea. I don't have this burning passion for this thing that I want to create something from nothing with, and the gumption to go out and take the risk to turn my idea into a commercial endeavor.
Hello and welcome back to the Entrepreneur Adventure Podcast, where we give you the tools to climb higher and faster than ever before. Let's face it, startups aren't for everybody, and that's okay. If you find yourself not really digging the startup gig, well, guess what? Your entrepreneur adventure does not have to be cut short just yet. Please welcome our guest, Leslie Cuban, a nationally recognized franchising expert. Leslie will be talking to us today about how a franchise may just be the next right move for you. And with that, I'll turn it over to our hosts, Josh Melton and Chad Brown.
Hey friends, welcome back to Entrepreneur Adventure. This is a pivotal episode today, and I want to do a little bit of housekeeping discussion before we dive in and talk about our topic and our guests. The reason today is a pivotal episode is today's episode marks the end of the contract with my co-host, Josh. So depending on performance today and feedback from you all, we'll decide moving forward if I'm going to choose to renew my co-host podcast, or we may be in the market for a new podcast co-host. So I'm excited to let Josh show you his performance today and see if we're able to renew his contract. That is for zero pay. So there is a lot of pressure on the line here for him. And now let's talk about our...
Is this... Like, I don't know if I should do this right now or not, but I actually have my two-episode notice I was going to turn in today. So,
Justin, is his mic on yet, or is it still turned off? I'm not sure we can hear you. Oh, yeah, we got you. All right. You can continue now.
That's it. This is probably the episode to talk about launching my all-new podcast. We'll get into it at the end. But, Chad, introduce our guest for today.
So, I'm excited to, all jokes aside, welcome our guest today. She is a franchise expert, author, teacher, educator, has helped over 500 different families figure out the right path for being a franchisor. As a business owner, is going to share a tremendous amount of knowledge with us today. I don't really know anything about the franchise side of things. I've been a small business owner all of my life, and just that's an area and a path that I've never considered going down because I'm not very educated there. So I'm excited to welcome Leslie Cuban to the podcast. Welcome, Leslie.
Thanks. Great to be here, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
So this may be, I don't know if you're in the market to co-host a podcast, but if you perform well, apparently there may be an opening. You could be the next co-host for the Entrepreneur Adventure Podcast. So should you want?
Well, I was a communications major in college, so maybe the resume fits.
There we go.
Stars are aligning.
Everything's on the table today. I'm have an open mind of where we go from here with my Entrepreneur Adventure Podcast.
By the end of this, you'll own a new franchise, and Leslie will be co-hosting the podcast. It's going
to
be beautiful.
Josh is actually looking to franchise, I'm guessing after today, a podcast of his own, something to do with like track suits and sparkling water or whatever you're going to focus on.
Yeah, we're still in this discussion about what's going to happen next.
All right, let's talk about franchising. Leslie, tell us a little bit about your journey and history and what got you here in your business career.
I'd love to. Thanks for that. My journey began 25 years ago. Actually, this year is my 25th anniversary as a franchise owner myself. And I've been a franchisee of a couple of brands. My first was with the Mailboxes, Etc. franchise,
okay, yeah.
Which is now called the UPS store. So I was fresh out of college and living at home and partying too much. And my father said, I didn't just put you through college for you to do this. So we're going to find you something to do. And he had kind of interestingly, very similar to a lot of the people that I'm working with now, he had had a long stint in the corporate world. His job was impacted by a merger. It had him, you know, look at what can I do besides work at a big company, starting my own business. That led to him going into franchising. And our family then through the years was involved with several brands in photo finishing, in sign production. So I did kind of grow up in that small business environment. And when I was floundering with what am I going to do, it was kind of the easy go-to. So I did get some family help with that. And I ended up thriving in it. I loved being my own boss. I was 23 years old at the time, so I definitely needed some help, and I certainly could have not have done that on my own, you know, but I had the help of a strong franchise brand, and I did indeed call them every single day with new things that I was learning and challenges that I was facing, and they helped me not only learn how to run that business, but how to run a business, and so it really helped me develop my skill set and get my confidence level that I can do something on my own. And so that was a great experience. And concurrently, I got into the consulting side of things, which I've now been doing for the past 20 plus years, also aligned with a franchise brand called Franet. So I assist other people look at franchising as I continue to be a franchisee myself. So I like people to know that I'm drinking my own Kool-Aid every day with this stuff. I have a franchise agreement and pay the fees and the royalties and all the stuff that you do is something that I'm committed to and living as a business owner myself every day as well. So it's really been a great ride. I get to meet a whole lot of people, different entrepreneurs who are franchising their business. I work with people looking for new adventures, getting into their own business for the first time and get to be a part of that journey of helping them figure out if it's the right path for them. That's
an awesome start. And for me, the first time I've ever thought about somebody being a young entrepreneur and being in their early 20s, gaining that experience without having to trial and error all the systems and business decisions and everything that goes along with building a business from scratch. What a great education. I would imagine you learned more in that first year of the franchise than you did in all your school or business knowledge through the family to date.
OTJ, on the job. Absolutely. Dealing with customers and employees and the good and the bad of that and crazy people. And, you know, it's interesting when you rent mailboxes to people, you meet some interesting people. Most are very normal small business owners, people who work from home, but there's some interesting individuals in there as well.
This is why you should start your own podcast, Leslie. Stories learned from mailbox, et cetera. The UPS
mailbox confession.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Also, I would love to know at what point in time, if it was like they were out to dinner, they're out to drinks, but somebody was like, I got an idea. Let's start our franchise that tells people to get a franchise. I just think Franet's a phenomenal idea. So you're consulting with people that maybe they're already a business owner, maybe they have a corporate career and they want to own their own business. And so you help them figure out what the right opportunity for this for them would be in the franchise world.
And even before that, it's a process of working with folks to figure out, should they be looking in franchising? And for some people that answer is yes. For some people that answer is definitely no. Franchising is one of many great ways to be an entrepreneur. And it is a fit for a lot of people, particularly for first-time business owners. But there's definitely people too entrepreneurial or just doing something that wouldn't make sense to go down the road of being aligned with a franchise brand. So yes, it's the right fit in the market of franchise opportunities. But even before that, is this a worthwhile endeavor for someone to even consider?
And how do you start that process? Is that a vetting process that is a quiz someone takes, or is it just a conversation you have of understanding what they're looking to do, whether it's be a business owner or invest money in business? How does that begin from their journey?
Well, and most of the people I work with, they come to me through referrals. So the conversation okay. just usually does start with a conversation or a cup of coffee with someone about what leads them to have this conversation, what has them interested in opportunities like this. And sometimes, you know, people are looking to make a career change. Sometimes they're looking for a side investment. You know, those and other goals can be met with certain franchise opportunities. But I do have an assessment tool. Ultimately, for me to really roll up my sleeves and be able to help people answer that million-dollar question, well, which business? And is there a business that makes sense for me? I do ask them to do some homework first through an online assessment tool that we use. It's the data for the assessment tool is based on a few thousand high-performing franchisees in different industries across different systems. And it's sort of like a DISC assessment fit tool for which franchise am I aligned to own and succeed in. So it starts that process of giving some scientific fact information about what sorts of industries and businesses would fit someone's values, their motives, their core competencies. So the tool doesn't answer the question, which franchise, but it helps me get started with someone down that path of what's the right fit for them.
So it's interesting to think about. So me and Chad have both been in business now for 20 years. And again, dabbled a little bit with franchising through co-owning a franchise for about a year and a half or 2 years before we sold it. But there are some good franchise companies. There's probably some that aren't so great. And I'm sure there's a ton of great stories. So what I'd like to know, Leslie, is how do you choose, again, not necessarily on the assessment of knowing this is the type of industry or setup that may be good for this particular person, but for the average person that's looking at owning their own business, how do you even start to figure out which is a good franchise company just in general? It's not like what's the right fit for me, but just anything. Yeah. There's always going to be some out there that aren't great. You know, that you're like, ooh, wish they weren't in the industry. How do people make those decisions, or what kind of information do they need to look for to try to quantify what is a good franchise company, what is not a good franchise company?
And Josh, you're asking a really important question here. And, you know, to the person who's new to this, they're going to get out on the internet, you know, they're going to start, you know, searching best franchise opportunities or industries in which they have interest. And buyer beware, don't click on anything. Otherwise, you will receive a never-ending slew of who knows what kind of information in your email inbox. But it's hard to tell. I mean, you can't tell on the surface. You know, is this a well-organized, well-resourced franchising organization with the right talent on their bench to actually make this work? Or is this some guy who just threw together his franchise agreement? And all of that is out there. And I think it's a really, really important buyer's beware mindset that prospective franchisees should have when they start exploring this, because there's approaching 4,000 franchise brands in North America alone, and they are not all equal. I mean, not even close. And I've seen several hundred of them over the course of my work. Some I've worked with very closely for a long time. You know, others we start to engage and we realize they're really not right for us to work with. So, but yeah, there's a big difference. And I mean, this is worthy of the rest of the podcast here, is just what does it take to be a good franchisor? It takes resources. It takes not just expertise in your business, but you've got to have real resources in order to appropriately fund and address the franchising side of your business. You may make the best pizza in town, but that does not mean that you're anywhere near ready to start selling pizza franchises. So,
that definitely makes sense. And adding to that a little bit, we talked a second there about what makes a good franchisor, and then the other side of what makes a good franchisee. What is it? Somebody, I know for entrepreneurs, a lot of times when we start our own business, our Achilles heel is we just build ourselves a job. We take away all the freedom. We put a lot of stress. We build on clients. We don't have systems. And before you know it, the reason a lot of people became entrepreneurs and business owners, they've done quite the opposite. They're working all the time. They're a slave to their business. Is the franchisee system built to work around that, or is it built for somebody that's looking just to invest money and not a lot of time? What makes the perfect franchisee, and what is the appeal and the safeguards there to protect the entrepreneur from making the mistakes of a startup?
And that actually has a couple of different answers. I think that the nice thing is there's not a one size fits all here. I think some common variables though that you'll see across people who are successful as franchisees and enjoy that experience is they're not necessarily the visionary. You know, what I consistently hear from people is, I would love to own my own business, but I don't have the idea. I don't have this burning passion for this thing that I want to create something from nothing with, and the gumption to go out and take the risk to turn my idea into a commercial endeavor, but has good skills, you know, recognizes that, you know, I know I've got a good head on my shoulders. I'm good with people. I, you know, can lead teams. I am comfortable with customers. So that's a great candidate for franchising, is someone who wants to put their business skills to work, but doesn't have that passionate idea and doesn't feel the need to have their own passionate idea. They're comfortable just taking a business model that has already been formulated to some degree and running with it. And secondly, someone who's coachable and someone who is okay with the fact that the trade-off of a franchise is, theoretically speaking, you reduce some risk, but you're giving up some control.
Yeah, you're playing by the rules.
Yes. And the bigger the franchise gets, the bigger the brand, which can have some real benefits, the more control that they have and they require. So, you know, there's some benefits to more mature franchise companies. There's benefits to younger franchise companies. They're different benefits, but if definitely, you know, it is willing to forego having creative leeway on every single decision in order to take advantage of a business model that has already been vetted to some degree.
Are most of your clients employees that are looking to become business owners, or do most of them have business experience when they come down the road of being interested in looking at different franchises?
You know, I'd say the bulk of the folks I work with, you know, they've been in a corporate career. They've been employed in a medium or a large company, kind of like my dad. He worked at 3M for 15 years. You know, all he had ever known was working, you know, at a big company, and then corporate changes happen. And that is a common story of a lot of the folks that I work with, a reduction in force or just wanting to do something different, kind of tired of working for the man.
Yeah.
But has developed some skills. I definitely work with some business owners here and there that entrepreneurs who have experienced creating everything themselves, and they know the time and the money and the energy and the risk of that. And again, knowing that they're willing to forfeit some control in order for having some of those things already done and having them in place. But most, I mean, that poster child, great candidate for franchising, usually is someone who's been in the force for at least 10 years, developed some skills and ready to now put those skills to work on their own.
So when I hear coming from corporate America, that to me says, I've got money. I've made money. I've got money. I want to stick it in some sort of franchise and grow from here as a business owner. Is that a requirement of a lot of franchises, or do they finance a lot of franchisees coming in? Is there a money side of a requirement?
Yeah, there? That's a great question. So speaking to the franchisee or potential franchisee, yeah. What should one expect? I know it's going to be different for different franchise that they want to buy into, but an average amount of capital they have to bring to the table, right?
Is what you're asking. Yeah, yeah. And is that able to be financed, or is it liquid cash? What does that look like for somebody that's in our audience right now that's like, I've never thought about owning a franchise. I wonder if I have enough money. I wonder if what are my requirements there?
And this is a really important factor. I mean, the at the end of the day, you have to have some capital in order to look at this. But, you know, people are sometimes surprised at there's some modestly cost really strong franchise businesses out there. And the big X factor on cost is location, real estate. If you need a very prominent, large location, and it's got to be right next to that brand new Whole Foods or next to the Super Target, you're talking A real estate, and that's getting much pricier than, I mean, there's a bunch of service businesses out there that you don't need any real estate for. You can operate from your home, or it's mobile based, or a co-working space, or small and expensive industrial park office space. So you know, those businesses, that upfront investment can be a lot more modest, but still, I mean, someone really needs to have 50,000 of their own capital to be at a starting point, to be a candidate to look at a span of different options. But there's definitely financing opportunities out there. Small business SBA loans are the most common type of debt financing. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is the SBA, the government does not do any direct lending to me or to you as a small business owner. You still have to go through the bank, and the bank has their criteria and qualifications for lending money to franchises and non-franchises. So there's still some hoops to jump through for that. But it is a very viable way that people can acquire some of other people's money in order to start their business.
Gotcha. And with that, when we talk about capital and we talk about loans and things, especially for the young business owner, the 23-year-old, is that something franchises are open to partnerships where there's an investor or a capital silent partner in it, and there's the operating side of things?
And this is what you're describing is very much a growing part of my business, the types of clients I see, these multi-generational clients like me with my dad. I'm seeing more and more of that every year, where you have a bright, you know, college grad that maybe they've been in the workforce for a couple of years. They're bright, they're ambitious, but they don't have the capital at that point themselves. But what I see frequently is them partnering with a parent, usually, who may be sunsetting their career, their corporate career, or their business career, and it's attractive to both of them to partner together. The parent brings skills and some capital and some mentorship, and their adult child brings energy and probably a nascent technology understanding that they may not come so naturally to their parent, and they can bring some different talents and skill sets to that situation. And I'm seeing that more and more, and it's really exciting. Maybe be able to work with family partnerships in that way.
Leslie, how often do you see it where someone remains in their corporate job? So they're not trying to necessarily escape corporate America, but they also realize that they want a plan B, or they want to have something they feel like they have some control over with their income, should there be a down economy. Do you see people that are buying a franchise and keeping their corporate job as well and running it on the side, or hiring someone to run it?
That's about half of the people I work with, okay. Josh, actually. So and I guess what I want to be really clear is that none of these businesses are absentee. If your listeners, if you see businesses advertising themselves as being absentee businesses, there's always more to the story. I haven't seen that yet, and if I did, you wouldn't be hearing about it from me. So you know, businesses do take time, but there's definitely franchise models. They do tend to be brick and mortar oriented, you know, retail bricks and mortar location. It could be in food, it could be in fitness, it could be in personal care, where the business model is such where the franchisee is going to be hiring a manager from day one. And they really need to, because the franchisee is not going to be cutting hair. They're not going to be applying eyelashes. They're not going to be teaching fitness classes. So they're the sorts of businesses where you're really relying on your staff to handle the nitty-gritty day-to-day boots on the ground of the business. But the franchisee still has to be involved. They can just be involved remotely. They don't have to physically be there all day, every day. And people do need to have some flexibility with their day job. You can't confine your hours for your business neatly into evenings and weekends. So people have to have some autonomy with their time. And quite frankly, COVID has really open the door for people to who are now working from home that were not before. They have more schedule autonomy. So I saw a real boost in this in my business over the last year, people having more control of their time by virtue of being able to working from home and planning to continue working from home. That gives them more leeway to be able to invest in franchises as their side gig. And sometimes people will have a family member helping them as well. So it still requires time, but you don't have to physically be there all the time is the point.
Now, if you figure out how to produce the absentee business owner successful model, now we're talking about something. I think that's a whole nother franchise in itself there. That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah. I've been the absentee business owner ever since I started my business. Show up every now and then, you know, every now and then we succeed.
I've been like the absentee husband since I started my business. It's more that route.
Different sides.
I've always
I would love to find that too. I would love to find that.
I think that's like the carrot that keeps getting dangling in front of us. Like in 3 years when I get here, I'm going to
But wait, there's more. That's what it makes me think of.
The challenges of entrepreneurship. I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, but it does have its challenges.
That's right.
I've always heard, and I have no idea if this is a statement that holds any truth at all, that to really make money from a franchisee standpoint, you can't own just one. Really, you got to own two, three, four, five to before you get into a situation where you can really look at making real money as a franchisee. Is that true, or is that something you see in your clients that has some truth to it?
You know, it kind of depends on a person's goal. So what you're saying, I think, is true in a lot of cases. If people have a really strong appetite to grow, and if they're looking to, you know, let's say they are that corporate refugee, that executive who is not ready to retire and is looking to maintain their lifestyle, you know, they want to replace or exceed their income. It does depend on the business, but they're probably going to need ongoing scale potential beyond just one location or just one service territory of a franchise. But, you know, not everybody has those goals. Some people are, you know, just looking for a modest level of income that they're happy with. And therefore, they may have their goal satisfied by owning just one. And what you're going to see from franchisors is they do tend to favor multiple unit or multiple territory owners because that's better for them. It's easier for a franchisor to have one franchisee who owns five than five franchisees who each own one. So they do tend to favor that. They tend to push that. And that makes sense for them. And I think people sometimes have eyes that are bigger than their stomachs. They have this appetite to grow and they acquire the franchise rights for a whole region just because they think they want to or they need to when they may not, when they may be very happy with owning one or just a couple are going to satisfy their needs. So I encourage people, look at what owning one unit or one territory would produce for you. And if you're happy with that, then don't necessarily get too enamored with this idea of multiple unit ownership.
Or the cost associated with that too, and not meaning necessarily just the capital cost, but a lot of times we can have this, like, especially with a franchise idea, fear of missing out. So, hey, I'm going to buy the whole region so that nobody else can buy close to me. I'm in day one.
Protect my investment, yeah.
Yeah, because if this thing goes the way I think it's going to go, then I'm going to want to grow to this level and not necessarily calculate the time and effort it was going to take to build that out. I can see that happening for sure. Cause we see it all the time. Leslie, I can't tell you how many times people have come in and talked to me or Chad from a consulting level and they're like, I want to start my own business. And so they have nothing yet. They have no clients, but the first things they're talking about are they're going to white label products and they're going to franchise their concept. I'm like, you don't have a pin with your name on it. Or actually a lot of times they do. They have no clients. They have their pin and, you know, all the stuff they can give me. I'm like, how much is it called?
I want a trademark and I want to protect and I need you to sign an NDA before I talk about it. Dude, you've never served anybody or sold anything.
Yeah.
Slow down.
Yeah, slow up just a bit. Yeah, your idea is not so brilliant. I'm going to steal it from you yet, right? But you said, and again, this was great because I wouldn't have thought of this, explaining the person who may want to buy a franchise, you know, the ideal franchise owner, maybe, you said that oftentimes they're not a visionary. This is somebody who leans more toward execution. Like, hey, I don't have to invent the idea myself. I just show me the path to victory and I'll make it happen. And you said they need to be coachable. Is there anything else that is just a characteristic of the ideal franchise owner beyond those two things?
I think the understanding that the franchisor is not going to come in and run your business for you. It is your business. You know, you are going to run the business. You are going to hire your employees. You are going to oversee the local marketing that you're going to do. So I think the willingness to really get in there and do it and do what it takes to succeed and think of the franchisor as providing the toolbox and business systems that can indeed make the startup go faster, because there may be vendors and national relationships that are already in place that they don't have to spend their time on. But you've got to get those tools out of the toolbox yourself and build the business. So I think, you know, people have some grit. I think that's true of franchised or non-franchised business, just a willingness to roll up the sleeves and do it and understand that it is your responsibility to do it for your business to be successful.
100%. I think about that. Like, you're buying the business in the box, right? So I'm buying the business in the box, man. Like, I don't have to think about everything, but they're not just buying the business in the box. They're like, no, I'm going to wind that thing up and there's Jack in the box. He's going to jump out of here and he's going to make this thing happen. And it's like, no, bro, like, you're Jack.
That's exactly
right.
And
if you ain't going to do the work, then you're the jackass who just bought this business. It's not going to work because you ain't going to work.
And it sounds like a good analogy would be, you're essentially paying for a specialized business coach at that point. There's a support staff and a business coach in this business and industry that's been down this road before. It's going to help you down this path. Everything else is on you.
Yeah, I think that is a great analogy. And, and I think another thing is the willingness to, you kind of have to trust the business system that you just bought. What I have seen with people, especially when they've been very successful in their prior career track and their business, they can get in their own way of their success by coming in with all their experience, which is good, but you're no matter what going to be learning to retool your skills. Most people buying into franchise systems are buying into something that is brand new to them. They're buying into an industry that they don't know anything about, and that's why they're choosing the franchise path. Otherwise, they could just perhaps go start it on their own if they're already an expert in whatever that industry may be. So people have to be willing to swallow a humble pill a little bit and just trust that the franchisor has organized their system in the way that they have for a reason, even if it doesn't make sense to them right away. But when that guy or gal comes charging in and they're going to, rewrite the operations manual based on their own experience, they're setting themselves up not only to have a contentious relationship with the franchisor, but they're putting their own business at risk.
First, you're coming after my job as co-host, and now you're slandering me with your description just then, because I'm 100% the guy that would buy the business in the box. I'd bring out the instructions. Like, hold on a second. Why are they doing it that way?
I know more about this. And they don't understand my town.
Yeah. Why are they making candles like this? I've made no candles, but I know I can do it better. And you'd be the guy that would be like, well, I don't care why they do it this way. We're going to execute, make this happen.
They've done this before. Now, you mentioned there, and I want to dive into some of the negative side of what I've seen from a franchise standpoint, and something that scares me from an accountant and a financial standpoint. Is I've seen a lot of young business owners, very little experience. They get interested in a franchise. They go for the weekend to an event or get hosted, and franchises have extremely high performance salespeople and production capacity. Do they drink all the Kool-Aid, they come back excited, they're ready to sign. And what I see come out of that is somebody that is willing to put in the time and effort, but they just don't have the capital in order to buy another truck or put another service on the road is $150,000 or $200,000. So every time there's an opportunity to get to a level to succeed or to hire a manager. They just don't have the capital. And it seems to me that the franchise didn't really prepare them or guide them on where they needed to be financially. They just, hey, let's bring him here for the weekend. Let's celebrate. Let's motivate. Let's inspire. Let's get them signed and sell a franchise and figure it out. And that has been a common occurrence as on the accounting and numbers side that I've seen. You want to speak to that for a second and how that's navigated on your side?
And you're speaking to something early in our conversation. We were talking about not all franchises are equal.
Sure.
And this is a big place where this shows up. So the hallmark of a great franchising company is that they will equally qualify their franchisee candidates as the franchisee candidates are figuring out if they want to be aligned with that franchise opportunity. I mean, the best franchise brands are looking for a skill match. They are looking for a financial match. And the better ones, they will require prospective franchisees to show them proof of funds and show them their ability to acquire financing if that's the way that they're going to fund their business. And they're going to require that a prospective franchisee demonstrate that they can afford the growth within the brand if they're going to be a multi-territory or multi-unit owner. Good brands, if they don't think someone has the capital to actually support the growth of multiple territories, they might approve them for one, but not for multiples. So I definitely, this is where you've got to pin the rose on the franchisor on how interested are they and how good is their franchisee qualification.
Yeah, process. And it's not,
and
it's
some
not
are only, much better at that.
And it's not only thinking through it and remembering back on some situations that turned out very detrimental to the franchisee. It wasn't even just the capital requirements. It was the fact that was their only source of income. Like they got into it. And when I look at the numbers, I'm like, hey man, you're whoever it is as a client, you're 7 months out from being able to take any money out of the business. And they're like, well, I don't have any other job or any other way to support my family. And that didn't seem to get discussed or quantified in a projection format on the franchise level. So is that where your services come in to really offer a level of protection and buffer for anybody interested in looking into this route and learning more?
This, Chad, is why it's time and money, mm-hmm. lack of one or both, which is what disqualifies 7 out of 10 people that I have conversations with.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Another way to say that is when I have initial conversations with people, I feel good about helping 7 out of 10 people realize that this is not what they should do right now because they don't have the time to dedicate to making a business successful, or they don't have the capital both to support themselves and to support a business that is a good match for them. So definitely someone in my role who's doing a good job is helping people avoid going down this path if they're just not in the position to do it successfully.
With that, and with quantifying if this is a good approach for someone, do you charge a percentage? You charge by the hour? You charge a set fee? How do you start this process? And what would somebody expect from a payment standpoint?
That's right. I've got to keep the lights on too.
Absolutely.
You know, thank you for asking that. And actually, the short answer is working with me to explore franchising requires some time, but there's not a financial cost to it. And the reason is the way my business model is organized is that I am a talent acquisition agent for several hundred franchise brands across different industries. They have successful franchisees. They want more of them. So they're employing my company in a headhunting type of recruiting role to help them find people who have the right bandwidth, the right skill sets, the right financial qualifications to be successful as new franchisees in their system. So, and our model is payment of a success fee. So I'm usually helping someone explore an array of different businesses and different industries. And if they choose one of those, then I have a contract with the franchise brand to pay a success fee for that match.
So there's not even a charge for the interested person wanting to inquire or learn more, which for our audience, I had no idea that was the case. I thought there was going to be an answer of a fee, and my argument was going to be, it's $1,000 to go talk to an expert. You're about to spend $200,000 on a franchise. This is the drop in the bucket. Most people don't do it, but it's even easier than that. It's like, go have some conversations, have some coffee, and find out, is this right for you? And is this right for the franchisor side of things? So that's even,
Absolutely. It is an investment of time. And I like to be very upfront that I don't work with all franchises. I don't have any clue as to some of the franchise brands that are out there, because there's so many of them, and new ones sprout up every day. A really reputable market research company called Frandata estimates that around 300 new brands are generated every year. So it is an unlimited universe. So I do not attest to suggest that I know about all of them. I do know about many of them, having worked with several hundred over the years, but people are free to explore on their own in addition to working with me. So we feel it's a win-win situation for people to take advantage of what we have to offer.
So you said that was 300 a year that try to get into the franchise?
300, model. Yes. 300 entrepreneurs turn their business into a franchising model every single year.
Okay. And you said earlier that there are 4,000 franchise brands in North America. So question for you in regards to that. What is the success rate, if you know it, if Frandata has this, of people that try to launch, get into the franchising world? Because we know that regular business, there's a high likelihood of failure for someone trying to start their own business in the traditional business world. But for someone who's trying to make their business, their business, they want to be a franchisor, they want to franchise their concept, what's the success rate there? I would imagine it's got to be similar, where most people fail in being able to accomplish that feat.
I don't have an exact number, but I can tell you there is a very high failure rate of franchisors. What we're talking about right now, people who want to grow their business, they like the idea of other people's time, other people's money by offering franchise licenses. And that is a grave mistake. Many of those companies are not poised. They have no idea what they're getting into when they're becoming a franchisor. So, and I get the same calls that you guys get. The guy who has he hasn't even started the business, but he's already talking about franchising. And I will politely make it a quick conversation. But really what I'm looking for is someone who's been, ideally for someone to be in a place where they are really ready to use franchising as a way of scaling. They will have been in business for at least 5 years. Ideally through some kind of an economic cycle, so that they can look back on how did they need to retool their business during a violent drop in the economy or a pandemic or a terrorist attack or some major event that is going to impact the macroeconomics around us. How do they deal with that? They should have expanded into more than one unit, ideally in different geographies. Because each time you expand into your second unit, your third unit, your fourth unit, you're refining, you're learning new things, you're improving, you're making that system more and more efficient and operationally sound with your replication of it. So ideally, seeing an entrepreneur have expanded into multiple outlets and maybe even in different cities or in different size cities, something that's going to work in a small town, the economics of that are going to look really different than in Buckhead versus in Rome, Georgia. So, they need to have diversity of experiences so they really have enough data under their belt to be able to provide qualified information to prospective franchisees. So they need to have some history before they're really ready to franchise.
And it's really interesting to think back on this. I was a young business owner 5 years in and had the idea, this is awesome. Our clients love us. We should franchise, and we can make 40 grand every time somebody buys into what we do, and we can help them set it up. And it came to the realization pretty quick for me, we have no idea what we're doing outside of this town, and we don't understand where our model is successful in different size cities. And the biggest piece was we got to have a call center and a support staff or somebody can pick up the phone and answer high level questions almost 24 hours a day. And I think that was the piece of the support system for a franchisee that's got to be in place before you sell even one of them. And when I started looking at the numbers, it's kind of that other side of it would take 8 or 10 franchisees to be in place before this thing even gets close to profitable from a franchising standpoint for a business like mine.
And actually, I've seen some data on that, Chad, that, yeah. that you know, the hallmark is reaching royalty self-sufficiency from your royalties, meaning, you know, you're selling franchise licenses is no longer a needed capital source. And really the best franchise companies don't need the licensing fee to keep the lights on. You know, they have other capital resources. We actually see a lot of private equity coming into franchising or multi-brand families of franchises with shared resources across the brands. Kind of that gap between well-resourced franchisors and under-resourced franchisors is getting wider. I mean, we're seeing that divide get bigger. But I've seen some information that kind of on average, it's around 40 to 50 franchisees before a franchisor is likely in a place where they are royalty self-sufficient.
Wow. 40 or 50. That's huge. That really paints the picture of how you need to build and grow and the capital requirements to look into franchising from a company standpoint. And I would imagine too, your first 10 or 20 are your most important, because if you have a failure rate early on, you're screwed.
You're done. You're done at that point.
That sounds like a lot of money and a lot of risk for a business looking to go that route.
And the upfront, so for an entrepreneur to hire appropriate consultants to help them put their operations manuals together, their franchise disclosure documents, you know, all of that is probably $50,000 to $100,000. Mm-hmm. But really to be in a position to support your recruiting your franchisees, the support staff to help those franchisees get their businesses up and running. I mean, we're talking well into probably several seven figure investment to really do franchising right, if you want to have a shot at being a leader.
Which makes sense as to why the bad franchises out there are so sales heavy and buy my franchise sign here, because with that much money on the line, the pressure is pretty heavy to grow and scale as fast as possible if you're not financially prepared for what it takes.
So we talked about some of the good, some of the bad here. I want to talk about some of the ugly when it comes to both franchisees and franchisors, and just some of the things that you've seen, Leslie, is like, oh, there was a situation, obviously not naming any names, but where that played out where you're like, oh, that one wasn't a good one. And this may be common, but I'll say for us, when we sold the franchise that we own, one of the things that, again, so Chad and I came in on the side, like after the original agreement was there and bought into the company. But one of the challenging things with selling the company was that this was an entity where you required a lot of investment to put other trucks on the road to earn income. So like if you wanted to go from this level to this level.
From 150. And if you needed to cross the 150 revenue mark, you had to spend 90 grand. It 150 was a cap per truck.
Yeah.
So to get to 300, you had to spend 90. So it was a constant up and down.
Because you got to buy a box truck and you got to put it with your equipment in it. And, you know, before you even put people in it, you had $100,000 basically into this thing. But so one of the challenges with selling our unit was that we had to pay a royalty based off of the total sale fee that had nothing to do with any of the assets and whatever debt may be attached to them. So we're basically being asked to pay a royalty on the sale that we're selling them debt with the collateral for the debt, and we're having to pay a commission or a royalty on the debt. And it's like, this makes it difficult for us to get out of this business without having to pay somebody to take it. We did make money in the end, but it really crunched our ability to exit that franchise. Is that something that's super common with a transfer of notes or selling a note to somebody, or is that unique? What our experience was getting rid of the franchise.
Selling a business is challenging, and franchise resales is about 15 to 20% of my business. So I'm helping someone buy somebody else's, you know, up and running business. And the franchisor is always going to be involved, and they have to be, because the Federal Trade Commission requires that the franchisor provide a disclosure document to any and all prospective franchisees. So they're going to be involved in some form or fashion. And then the good ones are really helping to facilitate that process. But I think that there's just some general, you know, in order to have a good outcome for your business, you need to be in it long enough to have probably at least 5 years to have grown it to the point where it's going to be an attractive asset for someone to sell, so that you're able to command a premium for the sale of your business. And I think that's true of any business. I mean, it's, you know, someone who gets into, and I'm not saying this was your situation, but someone who's only in it for a year or two is going to have a hard time getting out and being whole and getting out.
Yeah, I think our challenge was selling. So let's say we're selling assets, and which our agreement it made it difficult to do this outside of it. But if I'm selling you a building and some trucks, and I owe $400,000 on all this stuff together, but it's worth $700,000. I'm paying the royalty off the $700,000.
Yeah, the franchise is wanting to take 15% sales commissions on the $700,000. Yeah. It just made the numbers get tighter. Now we figured it out and all worked together, and it was successful.
Yeah, we made a win in the end, but the original
still in
setup.
Business today, yeah. Which is awesome. But it seemed to be every time we turned around, there was a fee involved, and we're like, good Lord.
And this is good. Yes, there are fees. And as a 25-year franchisee of two systems myself, I can tell you nobody likes paying fees. I don't like paying the fees. So, and especially the longer you're in the business and you need the franchisor less and less.
Yeah.
But you still have to pay the fees. And it's just one of those things that if the benefits are good enough, then you keep paying the fees. And that's been my experience, even though you don't love paying the fees.
We were just trying to let the next guy pay the fee.
Sounds kind of like taxes.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Like you're making money. You know, you're getting some benefit on the back end here, theoretically.
So you got to give us a good story there, Les. That's our story. And again, ours, we won in the end. We still found a way. And again, the franchise did work with us on this to figure out a way to win and make it where it made sense for all parties involved. So kudos to them. We did find the win-win-win in the scenario. But can you give us at least some story, a fun franchise story or something you saw play out that was like, ooh, that one, whether it was the franchisee or the franchisor, I understand you work for the franchisors. So maybe it's a franchisee story. But so you're like, y'all just told one about the franchisees. I don't know. Give us a good story, because I know when you're dealing with mentioned mailbox, et cetera, and all the people. So I know that franchisees, there's some quirky gals coming up for buying franchises as well.
The funniest story was, remember, this is in the 90s when I owned my location, and we had people paid me $1 per page to send and receive faxes. And so, remember, I mean, I wonder if anybody even does that any longer, but this was funny. So, you know, faxing was, I had lots of fax customers, and I took over an existing business. I didn't start it from the ground up. And so there were a whole bunch of customers who I hadn't met and I didn't know. And a lot of them come in after hours to get their mail. So I didn't necessarily see them coming in and out. And I started to notice that we're getting these really risque faxes coming across my fax machine. It's like you'd hear beep and it's like, what's coming next? And so what I finally figured out was there was a woman, she had her business and she was advertising in Creative Loafing magazine. Do you guys remember Creative Loafing? I don't even know if it's still around, but it was kind of a
I don't know if I'm supposed to say yes or not.
No, we have no idea. Not really.
This was a local magazine, local newspaper way back when. And it advertised, a lot of music and concerts, but there were a lot of personal ads and ads for all sorts of things in this community magazine. And she was advertising with my fax number to my business in this magazine. And so this was her communication method. And, you know, you can't help but see the faxes because you've got to put them in a folder and put it in her mailbox that she rents. And I never met her, never saw her. She paid her mailbox rent on time, all the time. And so it was kind of fun.
You mean you never stayed late?
I bet she comes on Tuesday night, so I'm gonna stay tonight and see what it is.
I would have been watching it like, when does the faxes get taken out of the box? Yeah, I would have had to do it.
Absolutely. All right. So you got 20 plus years experience in business in the franchise side of things. Let's take you right now, take everything off the table. You've been successful, you built up some capital, you have a few $100,000. For you picking a franchise right now, what would you go into? What would you do? What would be your number one pick, from today going forward?
So some industries I would look at, but my caveat is there are certain businesses that I think are awesome businesses, but I would not have the skills to run them. Like, I'm great at consulting. I'm great at marketing. I'm not a great leader of people. So businesses that have a lot of headcount to it would not be, even though it may be a great business, it wouldn't be one that I choose because it's not my skill set. But if I were, I would tell you, we're seeing some really cool concepts in pet care evolving. Okay. You know, goodness gracious, the pandemic created $3 billion more in spend on pets and pet services. It was already a $100 billion industry in pet care, and I saw some information that it's expected to triple over the next 10 or 15 years. So something where, you know, we spend more on our pets sometimes than we do on ourselves. So
don't tell anymore. I'll call you after this episode. You want to talk. I don't want to share anymore.
So this is confidential.
Damn, in the pet business,
this
guys?
This is confidential. I'm about to talk about on the podcast. So this ain't going to happen soon, but we've been looking and we're going to buy a plane. We're going to get a plane. And one of the things, so Chad sent me all this information and some due diligence he's done.
You did start the mind game.
I planted the seed. We're going to get a plane. And then 3 months later, Chad sends me a plane and all these.
I'm the implementer. He's the visionary. So he mentions a plane, and then I've got it all figured out and found it and got all the details, and we're ready to run.
I'm the guy that shows up at your office, Leslie, to say I have the idea for the franchise, but I have no customers yet. And Chad's the guy that buys it. Chad's also the guy that gets crazy fax messages sent to your mailbox at Cedra store. But Chad sends me his due diligence for this plane, and one of the questions that he asks is, can my dogs ride in it?
True story.
So
that was the deal breaker. I was like,
if the dogs can ride in
the dogs
plane,
fly
can't,
in the plane,
we can't get the plane.
How does this work?
So he may be buying the pet care franchise for sure. His dogs have nicer birthday parties than my kids have. No joke. It's pretty extravagant.
They have nicer birthday parties than I do.
And I've yet to be invited to one, Chad. That's interesting. So pet care, any other growing trends in franchising that you're seeing is like, oh, this is something that's exciting. A lot of stuff's happening here.
Home services. It was just the gravy on home services over the last year with everybody being at home all the time, working at home all the time, teaching at home all the time. You know, everything is at home. So my clients who've been in any kind of home improvement or home maintenance business, had more customers than they know what to do with. So, and not that I'm an economist by any means, but just word on the street is they're having an even better year this year than they did last year. So anything where it's making the comfort and enjoyment of one's own home all the more is certainly a place where people are spending their dollars.
It's so funny
because those are great industries.
In 2020, my mother-in-law lives across the street from me, and I walked across the street to her house, and there's this big truck in her backyard, and it's the mobile pet grooming. Like, her dog's in the back of it, you know? So it's almost
the
combination.
Combine both there, like the pet and the home services.
Hey, you're going to come to your
boom,
house and wash jackpot. Your dog for you. I'm like, whoa, man, this world is so unique. It's so crazy. That's awesome.
I like it. So in the case like ours, or speaking to the business owner that's been experienced 10 plus years, Josh and I, we own a cleaning company together. We've seen tremendous growth over the last 2 years. We've been doing this for 15 years. We're pretty dialed in, but we do have our challenges. Is that an option to even look at and say, you could take your existing business of 15 years in the cleaning industry, you could convert that into a franchise, be a franchisee to a bigger company and grow it exponentially more, or bring a lot more scale opportunity? Or is that something you're like, no, y'all have already been through the trial and error and systems of figuring all that out. I don't think there's any benefit based on what you'd have to pay from a cost standpoint.
You know, and so we're talking about conversion.
Conversion,
and that's, yes. That's a very interesting side of franchising. And you see that predominantly in certain industries. I'll give you a great example.
Okay.
I know a fella that he had a commercial sign production business, his own independent gig for many years, and he was pretty successful. And then he aligned his business and converted it to one of the major sign franchise brands out there. And what I learned about this was in a kind of a class setting, and he was the speaker just talking about his business and why he had made the decisions that he's made. And somebody asked that question, well, why would you do that? You know, you already know the business. And he said, I'm paying some fees now, and I have some rules that I didn't have before. But the reason I did it was because for the first time, I now have someone helping me negotiate my lease. And for the first time, I have price breaks on all my equipment, all my supplies, that I did not enjoy before as an independent owner. I also have the assistance of my fellow franchisees. He's like, I have a community where I was kind of out there, you know, on my own before. And so, I mean, it makes sense for certain industries. You see that in automotive. I actually see that in eye care. There are certain industries that have a dedicated conversion program. And sometimes the conversion is a new franchisee coming in and buying someone's existing business and at the same time converting it to the franchise brand when the owner of that independent business is ready to retire, they're done, they don't have a child to take over the business. So sometimes the conversion is actually a new franchisee coming in, buying cash flow, but converting to the brand as they enter.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you spoke specifically what we find often is for people that are solopreneurs or they started their own business, they're not a part of a network of peers where they can share, this is what I'm going through, this is what my challenges are, because they feel like everybody's their competition. If you're in a franchise, then by territory, the guy you're talking to can't be your competition, or at least it shouldn't be your competition. So I definitely see that. And then also from the end of, like you said, like when you're getting discounts, you're getting, like, you don't have to hire an independent marketing person to come up with all of your marketing ideas because it's typically being done for you. So there's definitely, again, in franchise companies, we'll tell you this, like your royalties, like you're not just paying a royalty, like you're getting something from paying that royalty. Like there's a huge benefit from doing that. I do like the fact that you said that franchising isn't for everyone. Again, if someone is not great with following the system, following the rules, then franchise, buying a franchise may not be their deal. But if they lean toward executing, like, man, just tell me what to do, let me do it, franchising is probably a better option for that person than coming up with his own business idea and having to learn it all by try, fail, and adjust. Because typically, theoretically, in a franchise, the trying and failing should have already happened. It's rolling out like, hey, this is what we know has worked in the past, and this is what you can do to succeed.
I would agree. And you know, but to say that, where I'll amend something that I said before is all businesses have to evolve. You know, they have to change. They have to grow to stay competitive. And the same is true with franchising. So, and when you look at how franchise companies continue to offer new services, how they evolve, how they communicate with their customers, that is usually a collaboration between the franchisor and the franchisee. You know, it's not just all coming down from the ivory tower at you know, franchise headquarters. It's very much testing and trying different modes of delivery, different new product offerings. So there can be some, you know, creativity that franchisees can participate in and can find that very rewarding, that they're a part of continuing to write the playbook and refine the system so that it stays ahead of the curve. And that could, I've been a part of that with my business that I've, when you look at our training manuals, my signature is all over it with things that I've created and things that I've contributed. And it's not something that I necessarily get paid for, but it's a feather in my cap that that is very rewarding. So franchisees do get that intrinsic reward of being able to contribute to the improvement of the whole system.
Chad, I always say this, and I think you've said it a time or two now too, but as we bring our episodes to an end, I typically say, let's land the plane here. I didn't know I was speaking into existence that we're going to land the plane here
literal
one day.
Plane, yeah.
Literal plane's going to be landing with dogs in it. I have little doggy seats and everything. It's going to be so awesome. But Leslie, for our listener, whether they are already an entrepreneur, they're already running their own business, or whether they maybe they have a corporate job and they're listening because they want to go out on their own entrepreneur adventure, we know that you'd be a good resource for most of these people to find out if franchising is the right fit for them and what further information they should get. So tell us, how can we find you if we want to talk to you about franchising?
Thank you for asking. And certainly through my website, which is frennet.com. That's FRNNET.com. But also my LinkedIn page. Just look me up on LinkedIn. To my knowledge, I'm the only Leslie Cuban with a K out there in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm networking every day for my own business. So that's a great way to get connected with me as well.
Perfect. Well, it's been awesome having you. As much as I hate to admit, it's been awesome having my co-host Josh here with me today. I feel like he has brought enough value to justify contract renewal. And to give you listeners a little background here, I got called into question or challenge with my opening statements by my co-host. So I might have started this episode a little fiery. And on top of this morning at maybe 6:30, I'm getting attacked on a group text message about my podcasting skills from my wonderful co-host. So I come in today a little defensive and decided to take an offensive position behind how I was going to approach this. So
you say attacked, I say constructive criticism. Challenge.
What's funny is there's about four or five other people on this text message chain that does not know us very well at all. And we were going after each other pretty hard this morning. So I think they're like, oh, I think they're really pissed at each other. This could be the end of their partnership. So they're like sitting on pins and needles to see what we send next. But it's been fun. It's been great having you today. I've learned a tremendous amount. It's really opened my eyes up to the opportunities there that you offer for somebody thinking about starting a business. I don't know why you wouldn't, if you're wanting to be an entrepreneur or you're thinking about investing anything in the business space, a starting point or resource to have a conversation or to do some due diligence behind what's out there from a franchise standpoint. I think that would be an extremely wise move from a business standpoint.
And I personally have been to some of Leslie's events before. I learned something. It was awesome. I came back and told people about it. So, Leslie, you've done a great job. That was probably 7 years ago, but now here we are talking to you on the podcast. So thanks for continuing to share knowledge that makes my life better. And thanks for being on the podcast with us today. We really appreciate your time.
It's been fun, guys. You both did a great job. So,
but who did better, though?
I appreciate you having me very much.
If you had to choose a co-host for your own podcast today and you had to make a decision right now, would you choose Chad or Josh?
Oh, come on, guys. I plead the fifth.
She's like, there's a good fit for both of you guys.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate all you're doing out there to help on the franchise side.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
If you're a fan of the Entrepreneur Adventure podcast, we would love to hear about it. You can leave us a review right here on your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to the podcast, or you can find us on Instagram at The Entrepreneur Adventure. Until next time, thank you for joining us.